This week in Linux, App 3.0 drops, bringing big changes under the hood. Amiga OS, yes, that Amiga OS, is still alive and getting updates, apparently. OpenSSL 3.5 and OpenSSH 10.0 both rolled out new features this week with also some future-proofing involved. And Sony, yes, that Sony, has released The Last of Us Part 2 on PC and it's Steam Deck verified. All that and much more on This Week in Linux, the weekly news show that keeps you plugged into everything happening in the Linux and open source world. Now let's jump right into your source for Linux good news. This episode of Twill is sponsored by Sandfly Security. More on them later. There's a brand new version of apt, the command line package manager used across Debian and Ubuntu. And of course, any distro based on those. App 3.0 is not just a version bump. It's a major release with significant updates from a cleaner interface to a smarter solver. So let's dive into what's new with App 3.0. So this release introduces a revamped text-based UI with a columnar layout, a color-coded output for red for removals, green for other changes, Unicode-based progress bars, better screen padding, and more. It's not just better looking, it's actually easier to read, especially when you're scanning package names and reviewing changes during the install and upgrades. Under the hood, App 3.0 gets even more powerful. There's a new solver that's enabled using the --- solver option. It brings a fallback to non-candidate versions and also a more aggressive auto-remove that only keeps the most relevant packages. This means fewer dependency headaches and a cleaner system overall, especially useful for advanced users managing complex setups. Developers and sysadmins also get a bunch of new toys. There's now support for a --- target -release in the apt list and a --- comment flag to record notes in history, as well as uncompressed indexes from the file URL scheme protocol or mirrors, and also many more things. App 3.0 also sharpens system-level functionality. It supports OpenSSL replacing GNU TLS or GNU Crypt and or GCrypt, properly calculates kernel size in the /boot, and adds transaction support and upgrade tracking in the package dep cache. So while an update to a package manager is not usually big news, App 3.0 brings better visuals, smarter behavior, and will be shipping with Debian 13, Trixie, and Ubuntu 25.04, which means it'll be available soon as a default experience for millions of users. And if you'd like to learn more about the latest release of apt, you can find links in the show notes. Sony just dropped some exciting news for Linux gamers. See, The Last of Us Part 2 Remastered is on the Steam Store, and it is Steam Deck verified since the day of release, day one. That's right. If you want to play the game on the Steam Deck, you can right now. For those that don't know, verification means the game runs smoothly out of the box on Valve's Steam Deck, and also typically means that it runs out of the box on Linux systems as well, making this one of the most high-profile AAA titles optimized for the Steam Deck. No workarounds needed. Now, that's awesome, but also the important part here is that it didn't happen on accident. So Nix's software, the studio handling the port, made sure the game worked across different hardware, including the Steam Deck. The deck is basically a low-power PC, so optimizing performance, memory usage, and shader compiling was crucial to making this play very well on the Steam Deck. The efforts highlights how far SteamOS and Proton have come in being part of the gaming ethos. Cohen Frauenfelder, the PC product director at Nix's Software, says this about the port. He says that Steam Deck is such a niche market, but it's so important. I mean, we're releasing a game on Steam, so yeah, of course, we have that whole community of Steam Deck players, and those are just like the hardcore PC players. They're really dedicated. And also, he goes on to say that we take the Steam Deck very, very seriously, and I'm super proud that we're able to get it verified by Valve. So this is great because it shows that they're trying to get the effort, the support to working on the Steam Deck, which also benefits the Linux gaming scene and all that sort of stuff. So I really am happy to see that these developers, and also it's a Sony product, putting effort into supporting the Steam Deck, because that just means, you know, very good for the Steam Deck gamers, but also good for people who just play games on Linux. And also, speaking of the shader compilation stuff, they improved that quite a bit. So if you played the first Last of Us on PC, you probably remember the shaders were a little annoying. The shader compiling is now done dynamically in game instead of all up front in the menu. This means the new system significantly is faster for loading and smoother gameplay, particularly important for devices like the Steam Deck, where resources are tighter and long compile times were a big headache in the past. So with more developers optimizing for the Linux-based systems, the Steam Deck isn't just a fluke, it's a serious part of modern PC gaming landscape, and that is awesome. So yeah, Last of Us Part 2, running on a Steam Deck, verified and optimized, isn't just a win for Sony, it's a win for Linux gaming, because thanks to Valve and the Steam Deck, we're getting support for games that just a few years ago, no one would have ever expected to see on the Linux system. And that is just awesome. And if this is how future PC ports are happening, sign me up. MPV 0.40 just dropped, and it is a big update to this slick media player app. For those unfamiliar, MPV is a free open source cross-platform media player with a lot of great features like support for a wide variety of media formats, audio and video codecs, and subtitle types. Plus, you can also do a bunch of cool additional things with the scripting system. MPV is one of my favorite media players, right up there with VLC. So let's talk about what's new in MPV 0.40. The biggest news is that this version now supports native HDR video on Linux through DRM Direct Rendering and DMA Buff Wayland, thanks to the new Wayland Color Management Protocol, or WP Color Management V1. This is a game changer for Linux users who want accurate color reproduction and true HDR support in their video playback. And it's not just about HDR getting love. MPV 0.40 also levels up with Wayland. The player now supports IME input via the Text Input V3 protocol, a clipboard access via native backends, XDG activation, and better handling of multiple track metadata. These changes make MPV more responsive and better integrated with modern Wayland-powered systems. A bunch of UI and usability improvements are also included in this release. There's a new command menu, improved auto-completion in the console, new selection menus for OSC, and new scripts like positioning.lua for cursor-centric zooming and drag and pan. Also, playback flexibility just got better in this release because MPV 0.40 adds better stream support for Blu-ray, DVD, and CDDA, as well as enhanced track selection and the MPV --URL prefix protocol has also been added. And whether you're watching physical media or streaming, these updates make MPV more robust and flexible. There are even more things under the hood that happened, and MPV now defaults to prefetching playlists, improves frame step, reorganizes configuration options, enhances numpad bindings, and introduces support for formats like screenshot-raw and multi-track metadata. MPV 0.40 is a big update, and as a user of the application myself, also with VLC. VLC is also great. I mean, why can't we have both, right? As a user of MPV, I'm excited to try out the HDR stuff. Also, just really quick, to the MPV team, great job on this release. Great job on the media player itself. It is great. I love it. But it's been 12 years since you released 0.1. I think it's okay to drop that leading zero now. You can just call it 40. And the next one can be 41 or 42 or whatever. You can just, actually, 0.41 can stay, but 42 naturally should be without the leading zero. So just do me a favor, think about it. Thanks. And if you haven't tried MPV yet, I predict that you will like it. Just give it a shot. And let me know in the comments, was my prediction accurate? As Linux users, we know what's up. Security is non-negotiable, but with threats getting smarter, your security tools need to keep pace without dragging your system down. Traditional agents, they just slow you down and leave blind spots. It's time for a smarter approach, and that is why This Week in Linux is proud to be sponsored by Sandfly Security, the revolutionary agentless platform designed for Linux. Sandfly doesn't just detect and respond. It revolutionizes security with SSH key tracking, password auditing, drift detection, and more, covering threats from every angle. Whether your systems are in the cloud, on-premises, or in embedded devices, Sandfly ensures they're all secure without the headaches of agent-based solutions. Listen to what Ken Kleiner, the security engineer at the University of Massachusetts, has to say. He says that Sandfly is the first product I've seen that accurately and quickly detects thousands of signs of compromise on the Linux platform. Its unique method automates tasks which would be manually impossible. Automation is key with detection, and SanFi completely fits this and other requirements. If your organization is using Linux, this should be part of your cybersecurity toolset. So experience security that's not just effective, but gives you peace of mind, no agents, no downtime, just cutting-edge protection. Dive into the future of Linux security at thisweekinlinux.com/sandfly and see how SandFly can transform your security strategy. And if you're fascinated by cybersecurity as much as I am, then go check out the interview we just had on Destination Linux with CEO of SandFly, who has an awesome story about how he got into Linux and also how he got into security. Check out destinationlinux.net/409 for that interview. Plus, if you want to save some money with the home edition of SandFly, you can use the discount code that we got. It's destination50. You get 50% off the home edition. So go to thisweekinlinux.com/sandfly to get started. That's thisweekinlinux.com/sandfly. Amiga OS just got a new update this week, bringing fresh fixes and features to this retro operating system. Yes, apparently it is still being maintained by someone. While this topic is not exactly Linux related, I thought it was interesting enough to put it in the show anyway, so here we are. If you're into retro tech, then you've heard of Amiga for sure. And if not, well, here's a brief history lesson. So Amiga was a line of computers released by Commodore in the mid-1980s. And they were known for its advanced multimedia capabilities far ahead of its time. Its hardware combined a Motorola 6800 or 68000 series CPU with custom chips for graphics, audio, and multitasking, enabling smooth animation, rich sound, and true preemptive multitasking. Amiga OS featured a graphical user interface, or GUI, support for multiple applications running at once, and a modular message passing architecture. While this doesn't seem all that impressive now, keep in mind this was the mid to late 1980s, and Windows was just barely getting started with 1.0 at the time. So it's a pretty big deal, but these days, apparently it still exists. So now that everyone is caught up, let's talk about what's new in this update. Amiga OS 3.2.3 includes 2 years worth of fixes and improvements over 3.2.2. It highlights include updates to the reaction classes, macro support in the text editor, removal of the 12 kilobyte chip RAM reservation, and a brand new Kickstart 3.2.3 ROM. There are also 50 plus other tweaks, including improvements to Disk Doctor and HD Toolbox. These are small but meaningful changes for users still running classic Amiga hardware, especially those with the 68000 CPU series or PyStorm accelerators. Now, beyond the code updates, there's also some news around Hyperion itself. So it's interesting is that they're making this work while also there's some, you know, ownership issues. Hyperion Entertainment, the company behind Amiga OS 3.2.3 release, went through ownership changes after its major shareholder went bankrupt. It's now operating under a limited liability cooperative model. Despite internal business turbulence, though, they are still supporting the OS and pushing out updates, something that's not always a given inside of these kinds of retro software circles. So zooming out a bit, let's talk about the bigger picture of the Amiga ecosystem in 2025. While Amiga OS 3.2.3 targets classic 68000 systems, there are also PowerPC-based options like Amiga OS 4, Morph OS, and even AR OS. Morph OS just saw a 3.19 release in January, and AR OS continues to support both x86 and classic hardware, with some progress on ARM. Now, to be honest, I was shocked to find out that there's still active development across these platforms. If you're a retro computing fan, you got some choices and even some modern-ish hardware options to run them on. So that's it for Amiga OS, a solid update for fans keeping Amiga spirit alive in 2025. And if you're a retro tech enthusiast, you might be excited about this new release, or are you just surprised that it's still even a thing? Let me know in the comments. Back in June of last year on Twill 267, we talked about a new effort from Tuxedo Computers to bring a Snapdragon X Elite Power Linux laptop to the market. At the time, they were hoping they would release by Christmas of last year. Well, that didn't work out. And since we are a few months removed from that hopeful timeline, Tuxedo has posted a blog post to answer everyone who has been asking about it. As you might have guessed it, there has been some delays. But first, there has also been a lot of development and a key development recently. Tuxedo submitted an initial device tree to the Linux kernel mailing list. It's incomplete, but it does show some signs of life. A working device tree is essential for Linux to even boot properly on ARM hardware. This is the real first step towards mainline Linux support for this machine. So that's good. But let's talk about what does and does not work. So the first thing that's working, we have touchpad support, keyboard, EDP display, but no brightness control, NVMe, USB-C, also Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi 7 is not tested yet, but Wi-Fi in general works. GPU with software rendering, and that's kind of it right now. Also not working is GPU, well, firmware loads, but output is a little jerky. USB type A, audio support needs to be worked on. Camera, fingerprint sensor, suspend and resume, those have work to be done. But there has been a lot of progress, just it's been kind of slow. But why has it been slow? So what's causing the holdup, you might be asking, and that is, well, development slowed because Tuxedo's engineers were assigned and are reassigned, and upstream work that they were relying on also kind of lagged. And a partnership that was planned with Qualcomm, well, that fell through, which is a big bummer. Though Linaro is now stepping in to help with that partnership. Without Qualcomm's help, reverse engineering and Linux driver work takes much longer, and collaboration with Linaro is promising, but it won't produce results overnight. So what's on the roadmap for here? So Tuxedo's next steps include adding USB 4, HDMI output, audio jack support, and continued driver testing. And they've also sent test units to Linaro as well. And also, despite delays, there's still excitement. Kernel devs have already been responding to the device tree post, and Tuxedo says the project has sparked interest in the community. Enthusiastic kernel-level feedback can speed up development and help Tuxedo avoid common ARM pitfalls, so that's really cool. So while Tuxedo's Snapdragon Linux laptop is moving forward, it's still very much a work in progress. No release date just yet, but still plenty of potential. Let's hope Linaro can help push things over the finish line. OpenSSL just dropped a huge update, and if you're running servers, building apps, or care even slightly about internet security, this is an important one. OpenSSL 3.5 is here. It's LTS, or long-term support, and it brings many improvements, including two big additions. First, this release brings QUIC support. 3.5 now supports server-side QUIC, or QUIC, third-party QUIC stacks, as well as zero RTT support. For those unfamiliar, QUIC, which stands for Quick UDP Internet Connections, it's a transport layer protocol designed to improve internet performance by reducing latency and improving reliability, especially in high latency networks, by building on UDP and incorporating features from TCP and TLS. Supporting it directly in OpenSSL opens the door for faster and more secure connections in the future. Now onto something I know you've heard of, that's PQC. Okay, maybe you've not heard the initialism, but I know you've heard of quantum computing, right? Well, in some ways, quantum computing is awesome and fascinating. And in other ways, it's a bit scary when it comes to cryptography because it breaks a lot of algorithms. This update adds support for PQC, or post-quantum cryptography, and these algorithms including MLKEM, MLDSA, and SLHDSA. So post-quantum algorithms are designed to withstand attacks from future quantum computers, so this is a pretty big deal. There's also many other changes, like OpenSSL 3.5 adds support for opaque symmetric key objects, multiple TLS key shares, improved TLS group configurability, and pipelining in cipher algorithms, and many more things. But that's it for now on OpenSSL 3.5. If you want to check out more information, you can go check out the show notes for the links. It's packed with security, speed, and even a bit of future-proofing, so it's pretty cool. OpenSSH just hit version 10.0, and it's a pretty big update, from prepping for the post-quantum future to important security overhauls. So let's break it down. So OpenSSH 10.0 introduces post-quantum encryption by default. The default key exchange algorithm is now MLKEM 768 by 2, well, X 25519, SHA-256 just rolls right off the tongue. It's a hybrid post-quantum algorithm standardized by NIST. It prepares OpenSSH for future quantum computing threats while improving performance and maintaining security parity with CURV-25519. Also, it's a major architecture change for OpenSSH, the authentication flow. So authentication code has been moved from SSHD session to a new binary, SSHD auth, isolating the pre-auth attack surface. So it enhances security by separating authentication into its own address space and improves memory efficiency during the SSH sessions. So another important security fix lands in this release with the disable forwarding directive previously was broken. It's now correctly disables X11 and agent forwarding. This fix ensures system administrators can now properly enforce stricter security policies and also better user experience for SSH config options. So there's support for the percent token and environmental variable expansion in the user and the set env or the set environment directives, plus new match conditions are available, which gives users and admins more flexibility and power when customizing the SSH behavior. There's also an experimental tool that was snuck into this release for those adventurous people out there. What is it? Well, it's a work-in-progress tool for verifying FIDO attestation blobs, and it is included but not installed by default. So you can add it if you want to. It hints at a deeper FIDO support in future releases and offers early access for those adventurous devs. That's what's new in this release of OpenSSH 10.0. Leaner, stronger, and with some future-proofing efforts. So that's nice. And also, if you'd like to learn more about it, there's a lot more in there. You'll find links in the show notes. Thanks for watching this episode of This Week in Linux. If you like what I do here on the show and want to be kept up to date with what's going on in the Linux world and open source world, then be sure to subscribe. And of course, remember to like that smash button. If you'd like to support the show and the Tux Digital Network, then consider becoming a patron by going to tuxdigital.com/membership, where you can get a bunch of cool perks like access to the patron-only sections of our Discord server, access to the patron-only Skybox, which you can join me during the live streams and have conversations in between topics, as well as joining me in the patron-only post show that happens every week after the show. You can hang out with me and the rest of the patrons in the patron-only post show, as well as many, many more things, including discounts and our store. You can also support by getting stuff from the store. There's the Linux is Everywhere t-shirt, there's the This Week in Linux shirt, and so much more. tuxdigital.com/store. While you're there, check out all the other cool stuff we have, like hats and mugs and hoodies and so much more. tuxdigital.com/store. I'll see you next time for another episode of Your Source for Linux GNUs. Thanks again for watching. I'm Michael Tennell. I hope you're doing swell. Be sure to ring that notification bell. And until next time, I bid you farewell.